Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. We finished the programme on Friday, unfortunately, with no news of the call that started the programme, and that was Mary Thompson, who was on. It's an incredible story, but it's a needle in a haystack because it happened in 1953 in the summertime, and Mary's mother, who was a young woman at the time, obviously didn't have children, she went for a swim, and as Mary described so vividly, got into serious difficulties. And then this young man who was staying in the local hotel swam a mile out, and much to everyone's delight and shock, he actually managed to get Anastasia, who unfortunately died, by the way, in 2016, age 87. But he managed to get Anastasia back to shore, and she went on to get married and work as a nurse and save lives and give life. And Mary wanted to try and track down John Eldred. Now, as I said at the start of the programme, I thought the name being so unusual that by the end of the programme we might have gotten somewhere, but unfortunately we haven't. Mary Thompson. Mary, good afternoon again. Let's try and exhaust this once and for all. Mary, have you got any information over the weekend?
Yeah, so Joe, basically, a cousin of mine is an artist, Anastasia, actually, of the same name, which is incredible, Anastasia O'Donoghue, my first cousin. She's an artist in Cork, and she's working with a man called Mark Eldridge. Now, it was my other cousin who alerted me to that, so I basically texted her, and she said that she'd go off and find out whether they could be related, but I didn't think so because there isn't an awful lot there. He is an artist, but it doesn't look like the right time. So I'm waiting for them to come back to me to basically let me know.
What is the name, Mary? Is it Eldridge?
Yeah, Mark Eldridge.
But that wouldn't be us. It's Eldred. All the newspaper clippings we got, man's name, or this young man, was John Eldred. And he would be... We had one link in Donnamead, because it's such an unusual name, but that person, we eventually tracked him down over the weekend, and they have never heard of a John.
Never heard of
Eldred.
Right.
So there's two things before we finish. One, if John Eldred is in his mid-80s, there is a possibility, hopefully not, but there is a possibility that the man is no longer alive. Two, that he's no longer in Ireland.
Yeah, because that could be it as well, you see. Yes, yeah, because mum couldn't find him, went back to the Bailey to find him, you know.
Yeah.
But and he would be a good bit younger than mum remembered, so he would have been a teenager and mum would have been maybe 25, I think it's about 25 or 26, so it would be 8 or 9 year age difference. So hopefully he is still in this world with I'll be hoping he is, but as I say, I don't know. So I'm just waiting for that news because it just seems a coincidence that this chap is working with my cousin, and it's just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So you never know. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
There's a thing coming in now. That's bad news, Mary. John Eldred is no longer in Ireland. But John Eldred is alive and well and living in a place called Malmesbury in Wiltshire. John Eldred, good afternoon.
Oh, my God.
Hello. It's me, John Eldred. I'm alive.
No way. Yes. Oh, my God, John. Oh, my God.
I'm so impressed.
Oh, my God. Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh. That's unreal. Thank you, God. Thank you. Thank you so much. How are you? How are you?
Oh, fine. I'm fine. I'm getting on a bit, but... No, it's absolutely fine. I was fascinated by your account of this story.
Did you hear it? You heard it, did you?
I certainly did. I heard it. It was most...
You did not.
So emotional. It was amazing.
And John, I mean, like, how old are you now, do you mind me asking you?
I'm 84.
What age are you?
84.
You're 84. So, you weren't that much younger than Mum then. And
no, I was 17, I think, something like that.
You're nearly right about your age. Do you remember the whole thing clearly?
Oh, clearly, absolutely, like yesterday.
Well, John, remind listeners who didn't hear the story on Friday from Mary. Remind, if you can, listeners of what happened. It's great to talk to you, John, by the way. You're a gentleman.
Tell
us what happened.
This is what happened, Rob. I was on holiday with my parents in a hotel in Ireland. I can't remember what it was called now. But,
was it called the castle in Cahor?
I think it was. It was near Cahor,
yeah.
I know that.
Yeah.
It may have been the castle. Nice hotel. Anyway, we were sitting in my parents' bedroom having a chat when there was quite a commotion outside. There was a girl who was very distressed, and she was shouting for help, saying her sister was drowning,
mm-hmm.
and,
right.
or drowned or something. And she was very distressed. And so my father heard this. He said, quick, run down to the beach and see what you can do. So, you know, I was 17, I was fit, and mm-hmm. I ran like mad down to the beach. And there was nobody there. There was just three chaps. I think they might have been local farmers' lads, mm-hmm. standing there in their waistcoats. And they saw me coming, and I looked out to sea, and I could see there was someone out to sea. I should correct you. There wasn't a mile out to sea. It was a mile down the coast.
Okay.
She got swept.
Right. Okay.
Swept down. Wow.
I would say about 300 yards out to sea.
Okay.
And
okay.
So she was throwing up her arms and shouting, and these lads. So I came down and they said, "Can you swim?" I said, "Yes." "Can you save her?" And I said, "Yes." So I started taking some. I'd had life saving training, you know, at school.
Yeah.
And so
right.
I took off a few clothes. But they took the rest of the clothes off me, so I was standing there in my underpants.
Okay.
And so in there I went into the water and swam like mad. I could swim quite well because I'd been partly brought up in Australia and I learned to swim when I was young. And got to her, and she was cool, calm, and collected. And so I had to turn around so she had her back facing me, and then I could swim on my back, kicking with my legs and towing her along.
Mm.
And she was very nice. She kept saying, "Are you all right? Are you drowning? If you're drowning, leave me and save yourself."
My God.
Said, no. I was so impressed with her. And so, anyway, we kept swimming, and she had her arms free, so she used her arms as paddles, and so we got along quite quickly, really. And,
yeah.
and then a difficult thing happened. As I said, I was in my underpants, but they came off in the water. And so I thought, oh, blow, there are more important things to think about than this. And
okay.
So I carried on, and of course I got to the beach absolutely naked. But there was nobody around, just these three lads, and then
right.
and then a couple of others had come down from the hotel, including my father. My mother was standing on the up on the sand dunes at the back there, and she said to me, why didn't you have any clothes on? That was all she could say to me. Why didn't... She was quite a Victorian lady, and so I told her why. And anyway, never mind. It wasn't important. But the difficulty then was that, of course, this current was quite strong. And so
uh-huh.
the clothes I'd taken off were about 200 yards up the beach. And so I had to walk back to get them where they were, absolutely naked. But never mind. Everything got done very nicely. Your mother was in such a good shape. She was very tired. She was very exhausted. So a lot
yeah.
of hands helped her. And they took her to a farmhouse. And
mm-hmm.
my father said to me, "Look," I said, "I've got a problem. I put my jacket around her to keep her warm, but my wallet's in the jacket and I need it." So we went to find her, and we found her there, and we're having a drink there. And then we went to the pub after that, that's right, and having a drink in the pub, and there were various people there turning around looking at me, and one came over, and mm-hmm. he was a dear for a local chap. He said, "Were you the young man who saved this girl?" And I said, "Yes, I am. I'd like to shake you by the hand," he said.
It was lovely.
And then several of them came over and did the same. And they were so charming. I was very moved by it all.
And you were very charming, and you did everything. I know some of the kind of the story is slightly different because everyone was in shock. But I mean, you saved my mother, John, and that is the most important thing that you. I hope, you know, over the years, my mother would have remembered you all the time and prayed for you and everything. And like, she wanted to see you before she died, but we couldn't find you.
I'm so sorry she died.
Yes, I know. But you gave, as Joe said there, you gave life. She went on to have five children.
Gosh,
you know,
wonderful.
She worked for concerned. We were living in Africa for a long time. We came back to Tipperary, and then she lived for a good bit of Limerick in her life then, at the end of her life there. And she was a very religious person and went to Mass every day, and we were for concerned. But Joe, I wanted to just shake your hand and wish you a happy Christmas and tell you much we appreciate you and what you did.
Well, that's very kind of you. I feel honoured to have had that opportunity.
And John, what age were you, John, when this happened?
I was 17.
You were 17.
I was an undergraduate at Trinity.
Okay.
And as I say, we were on holiday, and I was fit. Things were right. I was fit. I could do the job, and I was in the right place, and so it worked.
And you didn't hesitate.
No, I didn't hesitate. Why would I? You know.
Okay. And when Anastasia, which is fantastic, when Anastasia said to you, "Leave me if you think you're going to drown. If we won't get, leave me."
Extraordinary, wasn't it?
What she was saying was, "I will drown."
I think she was amazing. Yeah. So I said, "No, we're all right. Don't worry."
Okay. Well done.
She said it again, and I thought that's just so amazing. There she was. She's must have felt she was near death, been in the water for quite a long time, she'd been swept down a mile down, she wasn't a mile out to sea, she'd been swept down the coast a mile, she was about 300 yards out to sea.
Right.
And actually, she was quite fortunate, because the locals told me that just a bit further down, the current sweeps out to sea.
Yeah.
And that would have been another matter entirely.
Absolutely. And John, you see, when we dug out the newspaper reports from 1953, it gave an address for you as living in Howth in Dublin.
Yes, we were. We lived in Howth.
Okay. And are you, where were you born?
Singapore,
okay.
And we were born in Singapore before the war, so we were evacuated to Australia.
During the Second World War.
Well, it was before the Japanese arrived in Singapore. So we got out.
Mm-hmm.
And then my father was working at a firm of stockbrokers. And the other partners of the firm sent their families out too. And I'm in touch with one of them. And so his leave came up. And he came to visit us in Sydney on leave. And he then said goodbye. He's going to go back. And he got in a taxi and went. My mother was in tears. And then, blow me, about 2 hours later, he reappeared. And we said, what's going on? They said, well, they wouldn't let me on the plane. They said, Singapore's about to fall. And so he escaped. He didn't get interned, whereas his other partners did. And I've just read a diary of one of the other partners of his time in internment, which is pretty awful.
Pretty horrific, as we've seen in some of the movies. And John, well, then how did you come to live in Ireland?
Well, because of the war, and this wasn't long after the war, my father went back to Singapore to work and to get the job going and so on, and then there was no schooling for us kids, so I had two sisters, and so we went back to England. We were repatriated, or whatever the word was, back to England, and stayed with my mother's parents, and then we were rather separated, and my father didn't like it, and he was doing quite well for himself as a stockbroker.
Yeah.
And so he could retire young. He retired at the age of 52. And so he came to England, and I was actually at school at the time, but he wanted to visit a friend of his who he knew was in hospital in Ireland.
Okay.
And so he went over to visit and then said, this is wonderful here in Ireland. There's no rationing. it's a fantastic place to live. And so he went and bought a house, and then rang my mother to tell him he'd bought a house. And she said, he didn't even give me a chance to look at it. He wasn't very pleased.
And had your mother ever been in Ireland before?
No, never. I don't think my father had either, apart from that visit.
That was meant to happen.
This is incredible. So a young man of 17 years of age who was born in Singapore, who became an accidental victim to the Second World War, so to speak, goes to Australia. His father's life is saved by
good
luck and timing and a ticking clock, so to speak. Yeah. The father, the family then go to England. And then when he's in England, he happens, for whatever reason, to come to Ireland, which he'd never been in before.
No.
And what age were you when you landed in Ireland, John?
I landed in Ireland at the age of 12.
Okay.
Right.
And I remember that because I was at boarding school in England, and I just changed to the new school, secondary school, a public school.
Okay.
And it was a school called Arundel. And there was only one other boy at the school who lived in Ireland, and we used to travel back and forth together.
And, incredible.
Yeah.
So the man who saved your mother's life, Mary, and without whom you would not be here today, and your siblings and the grandchildren, the man who came to the rescue came from Singapore via Australia, via the UK, via Howth in Dublin, and fortuitously
and down
happened
down to Cahor Point.
And he's sitting there with his parents in a hotel that afternoon, and it's incredible.
It's amazing. It's an amazing story.
It's a divinity that shapes their end. The whole thing is just so strange. It really, really is, you know. And for you to be listening to your voice, you sound amazing. You sound like you're a very fit man. And what did you do in Trinity, John? What did you study there?
I did natural science. And I majored in geology and physics and joined an oil company, first of all. So I went out to the Sahara Desert and places and then got a bit bored with that. So I then left them and I went and joined a mining company in South Africa.
Oh, my God, wait, here. My dad was in mining. We lived in Africa for 6 years in Nigeria, and my dad was a mining engineer, and we lived there. Then we moved to Tipperary to work in Gortra Mines and then went to Limerick. So there's another massive connection, you know.
Whereabouts in Nigeria was him?
In Jos.
Jos, tin mines?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Gosh. It's a famous mine.
Yeah, absolutely, and then he came to work and but he died at 46 years of age, unfortunately.
46? Something happened to him, did he?
Yeah, he did. He got kidney failure, so and that was just one of those things. But you have enabled my mother to have five children and go on. We all are okay. I did lose a sister, but when she was 18 in a car accident. But we are all alive and well, and my brothers are married with lovely grandchildren. Mum had eight grandchildren, and that is down to you, John Eldridge.
Where's your name come from, John?
Eldridge. It's a very old name, actually. It's an Anglo-Saxon name, and it's one of the oldest family names in England, I'm told.
And tell us, how did you find out? You said you heard the interview.
Yes, friend of ours, Stephanie. Hmm. Heard the programme on her car radio.
Okay.
I said, John Eldridge, I know John Eldridge. So she rang me up and said, did you save a girl from drowning in near Cahor? I said, yes, I did. Good gracious me, she said. Well, then she told me what happened. And so I listened to the story, your story, on the radio, which was very moving. I was very touched by the whole thing.
Have you children, John, can I ask?
I've got one son.
Mm-hmm.
And I married very late. I married when I was, I had him when I was 54.
Great.
And
54 is young. Stop it, John. 54 is never too late.
Absolutely.
It's a great age. So you got married at 54. You have one son. Have you grandchildren?
Yes, our daughter. It's my wife's daughter, actually.
Okay.
She's had a little girl and a little boy, and they're both absolutely wonderful. My wife dotes on them.
Great.
And she's up and down to London to babysit him.
And when did you leave Ireland and why?
We left Ireland when I graduated because I needed a job.
Okay.
And, there I was. I graduated in geology and I thought, well, I want to use this. And so I got a job with an oil company,
mm-hmm.
exploring for oil. That's why they sent me off to the Sahara Desert. And so then came back. And that's there weren't really jobs in Ireland. And Ireland did become a mining country after a while,
mm-hmm.
and I've got a very good friend who's had his career there.
And have you been back to Ireland since, John?
Yes, I have. Yes, we went back for a wedding.
When?
Oh, some years ago now. Must be 10 or 12 years ago.
Okay. And is your wife?
She's a Scot. She's a real
and,
Scot.
Has she ever been in Ireland?
Yes. Well, she came with me when we went to the wedding.
Okay.
But I've kept telling her.
Yeah.
She keeps reminding me of it. I haven't done it. But what I want to do is to drive across,
mm-hmm.
Perhaps to Belfast, and then go along the coast, down to Connemara, and right the way around, down to Cork, because it's a wonderful drive.
Yeah, it sure is.
And
would you come back to Cahor this way? Would you ever be in Ireland again soon? I'd love to meet you.
Well, I could easily do so, yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly.
And I could organise a big family affair and basically just and bring you back down to where you were. And you will not believe what you did. When you see it, you'll be shocked.
And John, have you told your family about the rescue?
Oh, yes, I have. I mean, you know, I gave them the... I said, Google looking for John Eldred. So it did, and they picked up that wonderful story. And it brought tears to everybody's eyes.
But do your children and your wife, do they grasp the enormity of what you're doing, or are they saying, oh, you're exaggerating, Dad? And
no, they didn't. You know, no man is a prophet and all that. And so they didn't. But it wasn't until they heard the radio that they realised that actually it has had quite an impact on other people. And
now
I get a bit of ribbing because of that bit where you said that I jumped up like a frog.
Oh, yeah.
So I get this.
That's what Rita remembers, yeah.
And by the way, John, your dad, was your dad who set you go? Was there any chance of him going into the sea? You follow me?
He was an older dad, you see.
Okay.
And, I mean, he had his young son there, so much easier for him to push me into the sea.
Well, it's very brave of him, actually, to volunteer you to swim out to rescue this drowning woman.
When I left the hotel, started running down to the beach, we thought that your mother had drowned, and he said, run down and see what you can do, because I had life-saving training at school, and so I knew how to apply artificial respiration and so on. And so I did. So I was surprised to find that she was still in the sea and out there, you know, waving her arms up there quite a long way out. Not a mile. But
John, it's looking back at your timeline, did you learn to life save when you were in Australia?
No, when I was at school in England.
Oh, school in England?
Yes.
Okay.
We had quite a big pool.
I was going to say, that's unusual. What school was that, do you recall?
It was called Arundel, in the village of Arundel, in Northamptonshire. And it's quite well known here. It's one of the good public schools.
Yeah.
And my father could afford it.
I'm just thinking of all the serendipity here. The fact that you were able, because of life circumstances you were born into, to go to one of the top, as they call them, private schools in the UK, which had a swimming pool, which is highly unusual. And they taught life saving. So by the age of 17, you were obviously, and you proved it, an accomplished lifesaver.
I could do it. And also, I could swim quite well, too, because of my history. Mm. And so I knew I could do it.
Good man.
Did you get tired? Well, you must have got tired. Did you feel tired?
No, I didn't. Not at all. I was a fit young man.
You sounded still a fit young man.
Older man, slightly older. And John, did you get much recognition for your...
Yes, I did. I mean, there was a little write-up in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it was slightly embarrassing because this young man came from the local paper and he said, well, how far out were you? And I said, well, from about here to that tree over there, you see, which is about 200 yards away. Yeah. Ah, let's see, quarter of a mile out. And and they said, how big were the waves? Oh, not very big. I said, a couple of feet. 6-foot waves.
Brilliant.
So
brilliant.
I was saying, steady on. He said, no, we've got to make this interesting.
Brilliant. Oh, that's fantastic. And John, you've had an interesting life so far. You've many more years ahead of you, please God. And how did you come to settle in Malmesbury in Wiltshire?
Malmesbury, yes. Well, because I lived in London. We lived in London, and the company folded and sold up, and so I was out on the street at the age of 54.
Okay.
And it was actually quite difficult to get a job at that stage.
Yeah.
A lot of mining companies were doing the same thing, so there were a lot of us around. And I didn't really want to. I just had a young son, you know, he's a baby, and I didn't want to go and live abroad and all that. So I thought, well, actually, I can afford to stay in England. And my wife had a bit of a private income herself, and so we decided to. So I thought I'd do some consulting, which really came to nothing very much.
Okay.
And so she eventually said to me, look, we're wasting our time. Why don't we go and find a country house? And I said, that's a bloody good idea. And so a friend of hers rang her, South Africans, actually, who had left South Africa very sensibly. And they said, look, friends of ours are selling their country house we think might suit you. And so we went to have a look at it. And so we're in it, I'm in it right now. It's a nice house and quite big and nice grounds and so on. Bit of land, horse stables and things.
Yeah.
So it's all the swimming pool. And I put in a tennis court, so we got everything. It's delightful. We love it here. But
that sounds fantastic.
And John, is there any history of brave acts like your own in the family?
Well, my grandfather, yes, he saved a person. He was at London docks waiting for somebody coming in on a ship, and somebody fell into the water from off the dock, and.
Yeah.
This was at night time in January, so it was cold, dark, and it was a dock water, which must have been oily and horrible. And my grandfather jumped in because this chap couldn't swim. So he jumped in and held him up until a rowing boat arrived and took him aboard. And he got a bronze medal for bravery for that.
Wow.
And it was a liner somewhere at sea, you know.
Were you aware of that story, John, when you were 17? That's okay. There's something coming through here in your DNA or whatever. But John, what accolades did you get in Ireland of the early 1950s for saving this woman's life?
This little model, this medal, I was summoned to the Doyle by the Taoiseach, and he pinned a bronze medal on me, and I was very impressed.
So that was
I didn't know it was the Taoiseach. That's amazing.
Well, I think it was. You know, it's a long time ago, and thought it was the Taoiseach.
Yeah.
I think it was. There was a picture in the paper, which I've got somewhere. I don't know where. I haven't seen it for years. Of me as a young man.
You don't know that more than you're saying, you know, because the locals would say that what you did was very, very brave, you know.
Oh, that's very nice of them. Thank you.
Because the treacherous waters down there and the fact that she would have been exhausted because my mother couldn't swim, you see, so she floated. Yeah. So what did was amazing.
Well, she was brave. She went into the water to save her sister and then lost her footing and got taken out.
Yeah,
it must have been horrific for her, not being a swimmer.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow she managed to stay afloat. And although she couldn't swim, she was able to tread water and stay afloat.
Yeah.
And she was throwing her arms up in the air, calling for help. She must have, it must have been awful for her.
And John, how are you today yourself? Are you still active?
I'm still active. Unfortunately, I had a small stroke a couple of years ago, which meant I could no longer play tennis or golf. It spoiled my sporting life, which I liked very much indeed.
Mm-hmm.
I used to play golf and love golf. My father was a very good golfer. He was a scratch golfer. And so I grew up, and golf was a very part of our life, you know. And that's whenever we went for a holiday somewhere in Ireland, we'd go somewhere where there was a nice golf course nearby. And we played as a family. It was most enjoyable.
Okay. So are you fully retired, John?
Oh, yes. I've been retired for an awful long time.
Okay.
30 years or something like that.
Okay. And you still... There was two Taoiseach in 1954. One was Eamon de Valera and one was John A. Costlow. They changed in the middle of the year.
I'm sorry. I just simply do not remember.
I know. Of course you wouldn't. Of course you wouldn't. And do you take an interest in Ireland, John?
Yes, well, I mean, you know, it's part of me, really.
Yeah.
So I do take an interest in Ireland, yes.
So
but when you get a rugby match, Ireland versus England, I'm never quite sure who to back.
Well, if you want to back a winner, you know, you have to back at the moment anyway. But, John, no conversation. Stop me if you want, but no conversation with anyone living in the heart of England at the moment is complete without what's going to happen on Thursday.
Oh,
and Brexit.
God.
Are you fed up?
I got Brexit fatigue.
Have you?
Yeah. The family are divided. I mean, I'm all for exiting. My wife wants to remain. So we don't really discuss it very much. Otherwise, I'm liable to get hit on the head.
And why do you want to leave, John?
I want our sovereignty. I want to make our own. I don't want to be ruled by Brussels. You know, I feel we're big enough and old enough to look after ourselves. Apart from which, I think the EU is going downhill. They can't even get their accounts right. And so I think, I don't know whether we'll do any better or not, perhaps not. But okay. I'd rather govern ourselves badly than be governed by somebody else.
And do you think, if you follow Irish media at all, you know that the 90% of Irish people want to stay in the EU. They'd never contemplate an exit.
No, well, I think they get quite a good benefit from it. And
You think
also it gets away from being under England. I mean, that's always been a bother for Ireland having England right there, and I think they've sort of benefited from being out of England and in the common market. Okay. My own view. I don't know if I'm right or not.
Okay. Now you're very forthright and fair as well, John. Yeah. Thank you. By the way, didn't you mention on Friday? What was it? Encyclopedia Britannica and a briefcase.
Yes.
Did you remember that?
I do, absolutely. The briefcase was wonderful. It was a very nice one. It was an expensive one, a very good leather briefcase, which I used for years and years. And I used it so much, eventually it began to rot, you know. Mm-hmm. And so then my wife bought me something else, and so I had to put it to one side.
Now, somebody else has contacted us to say that there is an Eldred buried in Goree Cemetery, which is not too far from Cahora.
Oh, my God, I never knew that.
Really?
Are they related to you, John, by any chance? You could be Irish after all.
There was. I've done the family tree going back to 14-something. Yeah. And there was one who had Irish connections. I remember that.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
But
you'll have to come back and see who that is.
And, John, have you any relations in Ireland?
No, I haven't. Yeah. I've really no connections with Ireland anymore. Yeah, I've got my old university friends there.
Well, you have a connection. It's Mary Thompson. You, without you, she wouldn't be here.
Yes,
yes, exactly.
Yes, it's a very good one connection.
That's a good
valuable
connection.
And I hope it's the start. I would love to meet you sometime. My actual dad was from Manchester. George Thompson was from Manchester as well, which my mother met him in Manchester Royal. And she would have got married to him after that and had the five of us. So, and you don't realise. One day I'll sit down with you and tell you the whole story, if I would be able to, and if I'm ever in England, I'm going to hopefully you'll accept a visit from me.
Well,
but
of course
you
will,
won't
yes.
believe
come,
what
come
happened.
Come and stay. We've got room. Yeah.
we're on our way.
We're on our way, Joe. You come because this is down to you. Remember, this is down to Joe Duffy.
We love having people to stay. It's a big house. We've got six bedrooms and. And so we love people coming to stay here. It's a country house. You know, if you've got a country house, you must use it as a country house. That's what we do.
Okay, John Eldred, it's an absolute tonic to hear your voice and to hear the story.
Isn't it?
Oh, thank you, Joe.
Mary, what do you want to say to John?
I just want to say, that man you're talking to, Joe Duffy there, John, is a great support to people in Ireland. And he does these amazing things for people from time to time. And this is one of those moments.
Well, talk to John.
Talk to John. But, John, I just want to say to you, thank you from the bottom of my heart on behalf of all my brothers, my sister who died, my family, my brothers, Chicago, all mum's friends in Limerick, and anybody who knows her and my extended family here in Wexford. You will never know the impact our mother had on the world, and that is down to you hanging on to her for dear life and bringing her back to that shore and looking after her. And I want to thank you on behalf of all of us.
Thank you so much. It's very kind.
And I hope maybe Joe will give me your phone number. Maybe I'd love to email you or talk to you.
Absolutely.
And if you're ever in Ireland, I would love to meet you. And if you know ever want to meet up, I would love to. And
that
I just want to thank you again.
Like that very much.
And God bless you. And well done on doing the most righteous and courageous thing anybody could have ever done.
For a young man.
And you did
much.
It.
17 years of age, didn't hesitate one second.
You're some man for one man.
John, so many kind regards from all our callers to you and your family and your own children and grandchildren.
Thank you.
Have a very happy Christmas. We'll see what the outcome is on Thursday night / Friday morning. Are you entitled to Irish citizenship? You're not really, are you?
No, I'm not actually.
Okay. They might make an exception if you ever want to because of the difference difference you made.
We'll make him our Irish citizen, Joe.
So, John, have a peaceful and a pleasant Christmas, you and your family.
Thank you, and you too.
In that beautiful house, your country house.
And, John, lovely to talk to you. And thank you so much for taking the effort to call back and let us know. I can't believe you're with us, and thank God for that.
Well, I consider it a great fortuitous honour, actually, to have the pleasure of talking to you and the events that took place.
Okay.
It's all my pleasure. And you've gone down in history, and everybody still talks about it to this day. You've no idea. You've got to meet some of the people.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Okay, Saint John and Saint Mary. John Eldred, thank you. Thank you so much.
And
Mary Thompson, thank you for
contacting us. Joe, thank you on behalf of my mother and a God bless you.
All the crew. Thanks indeed, Mary Thompson and John Eldred, who saved Mary's mother's life when she was a young woman, and they haven't spoken. Mary's mother, unfortunately, is passed on at 87, and the Thompson family haven't spoken to John until today. 51551.